like to, we continue with our theme, the Sermon on the Mount. This morning, my topic is motives in giving. That comes from Matthew chapter 6. Before we begin, though, I would like to take just a moment and encourage everyone once again to look at our website. That is the 19th Street Church of Christ.com. These sermons, these lessons, the studies that we are going through right now are on our website. And certainly, I know after each sermon I go back and I pull up the website and I look at that, and some of you take notes, some of you don't. I take notes. I can't write fast enough sometimes, so certainly it's good to be able to go back and look at these and, you know, take into consideration maybe the things that that we heard and how they apply concerning our daily lives. For our reading, Matthew 6, verse 1 through verse 4, this is the New King James Version. There it says, "Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men." Now, the King James Version says that you do not your alms before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have the glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. So as we study this verse by verse, there are 8 questions to take in consideration from the lesson this morning. Number 1. What are the 2 major topics in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount? Number 2, in Matthew 5, what things will change when the kingdom of heaven arrives? Number 6, what things must change? What things must change when the kingdom arrives? I'm sorry, that's number 3. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go back and look at number 2. It says in Matthew 5, what things will change when the kingdom of heaven arrives. And number 3, in Matthew 6, what things must change when the kingdom of heaven arrives. In Matthew 5, it deals with moral issues. What does Matthew 6 deal with? Someone once said about good deeds, if you tell it, you can't count it. Is this always true? Jesus said, let not your left hand know what your right hand is doing. What does this mean? What does God see in secret? Last of all, what are the 2 basic ways of receiving wealth? Before we continue, let us go to our Heavenly Father in prayer. With the beginning of Matthew 6, we see a change in what Jesus is teaching. You can call the theme of the Sermon on the Mount. We find that in Matthew 5, verse 17 through verse 20. And there it says, do not think that I came to destroy the law and the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly, I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till it is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so, shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you, that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. These verses deal with two major topics, the fulfillment of the law and the righteousness of the Pharisees. In Matthew 5, verse 21 through 48, it is dedicated in showing how Jesus fulfilled the law of Moses. Jesus fulfilled the law by retaining the strong points, strengthening the weak points, and erasing the bad points. Now, we have, beginning in Matthew 6, we see Jesus giving some examples of how to exceed the Pharisees in righteousness. First, in Matthew 6, in verse 1, it says, take heed that you do not your charitable deeds before men. In verse 2, therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as hypocrites do. In verse 5, and when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites. And in verse 16, moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance. In Matthew 7, in verse 5, it says, hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So let's summarize what we've talked about so far. The answer to the first question, what are the two major topics of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount? In verse 5, we have examples of fulfilling the law. In Matthew 6, there are examples of exceeding the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. In question number 2, in Matthew 5, what things must change when the kingdom of heaven arrives? Things that will change in the law itself. And in question 3, in Matthew 6, what things must change when the kingdom arrives? The things that must change is your attitude. So the kingdom would consist of a new law and a new attitude. Matthew 5 ends with, you must be perfect. And Matthew 6 begins with, you must be careful. In Matthew 5, it deals with moral issues. Things such as murder, adultery, divorce, lying, retaliation, and hatred. Question number 4. Matthew 5 deals with moral issues. What does Matthew 6 deal with? In Matthew 6, it begins and deals with religious issues. It deals with almsgiving, with praying, and with fasting. Other translations bring this point out very clearly. In Matthew 6 and verse 1, the New English Bible says, be careful not to make a show of your religion. It's important to realize that Jesus included two dimensions to righteousness, the moral dimension and also the religious dimension. You know, some people act as though righteousness is strictly a moral issue. Religion has nothing to do with it, as far as they think. They suppose if they are morally good, they can be saved without the church. Others view righteousness as though it is strictly religious. They suppose as long as they attend service, pray, and contribute, it does not matter how they live their personal life. Jesus teaches righteousness necessary to enter the kingdom includes both moral and religious duties. So from our text in Matthew 6 and verse 1, there where it said, take heed that you do not your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them, otherwise you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Charitable deeds. This is translated righteousness in other versions. the American Standard Version and also the New American Standard Version. Jesus is teaching a general principle. He's teaching a theme. Don't do your righteousness before men to be seen by them. And then he continues by giving three specific examples to demonstrate what he means. Don't give alms to be seen. We read in verse 2 through verse 4. Don't pray to be seen in verse 5 through verse 8. And don't fast to be seen in verse 16 through verse 18. Jesus didn't randomly choose three different topics. He purposely chose topics that deal with different areas of our life. Glory seeking was the sin of the Pharisees. In John 12 and verse 43, remember, for they love the praise of men more than the praise of God. To be seen, the Greek word comes from which we get the English word theatrical. We are not to put on a performance for the benefit of others or ourselves. In Matthew 5 and verse 16, there it says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. On the one hand, our righteousness is to be seen by men. But on the other hand, it's not to be seen by men. What does Jesus mean by this? In Matthew 5 and verse 16, Jesus is dealing with cowardice. We should not try to hide the fact that we are disciples of Christ. In Matthew 6 and verse 1, Jesus is dealing with vanity, which is the other extreme. He is saying we are not to flaunt our religion as to make a spectacle of ourselves. We are not to go out of the way to recruit an audience. A.B. Bruce, a Scottish churchman and theologian, he said this, we are to show when we are tempted to hide, and we are to hide when we are tempted to show. In either case, we are to act glorify God. We must avoid turning to the right or turning to the left. We cannot be cowards, nor can we be boasters. Question number 5. Someone once said about good deeds, if you tell it, you can't count it. Is this always true? This means if you ever tell a good deed, it will count for nothing in the eyes of God. This is not always the case. Jesus here is emphasizing motives. It depends on the motive behind the telling of the good deed. The Apostle Paul took almost two chapters, 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and also chapter 12, in telling of great things that he had done. And just because he told of them, it doesn't mean that they don't count. His motive wasn't to receive the glory of men. His motive was to prove that he was truly an apostle of Christ. I want you to notice that Jesus said, take heed that you do not your righteousness before men. We learn from this that righteousness is something that we do. Today, the religious world will tell you that being right with God is a do-nothing thing. We hear things like, just believe and you'll be saved. Don't work or you'll be lost. There's nothing you can do to save yourself. There's nothing you can do to be lost after you're saved. When I hear things like that, I always think of Matthew 7 and verse 21. There it says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. The other thing we learn about righteousness is that it is more than the absence of evil. It includes the presence of good. Some men pride themselves in the fact that they have never done anything wrong. They say, I don't smoke, I don't drink. I don't curse. I don't go to movies. I don't watch TV. I don't wear immodest apparel. I don't break the speed limit. I don't do anything. But righteousness is more than simply doing evil. Righteousness includes doing things that are good. In Isaiah 1, verse 16 and 17, cease to do evil, learn to do good. From our text, verse 2, it says, therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound the trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. Alms, charitable giving. There is a connection between righteousness and giving alms to the poor. The Old Testament taught the giving of alms in several different ways. In Deuteronomy 24, verse 19 through 21, the farmer was not allowed to reap his entire crop. In Exodus 23 and verse 11, every seventh year the land was to enjoy a Sabbath. In Leviticus 25 and verse 37, interest was not to be charged to a fellow Israelite, and especially to one that was poor. In Deuteronomy 14, 28 through 29, a welfare tithe was to be collected every third year to care for the poor. And in Deuteronomy 15, verse 13 through verse 14, when the Israelites freed a slave, he must be sent out with a liberal gift. Even Jesus and his disciples had a money bag for which they gave alms to poor people. In John 13, verse 29, there it says, for some thought, because Judas had the money box, that Jesus had said to him, buy those things we need for the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. These disciples had seen Jesus give out of the money bag so often that they thought that's why he sent Judas forth at this time. In Deuteronomy 15 and verse 11, for the poor will never cease from the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall open your hand wide to your brother, to your poor, and to your needy in your land. Jesus expects almsgiving. He says, when you do a charitable deed, not if you do a charitable deed. Jesus expects his disciples to do this. This is an individual thing required of each of us. Many denominations have benevolent committees that their members may send some needy soul to. No feeling of personal obligation. Other congregations have one member who is overly generous. Everyone send the needy toward him. And again, there is no feeling of personal obligation. As Christians, our command is in Galatians 6 and verse 10. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us be good to all, especially to those who are the household of faith. That doesn't mean that we are just to be nice to them. It means that we are to help in time of need. 1 John 3 and verse 17, but whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? This is not an option for us. It's not if you give. It's when you give. Hypocrites. The Greek word for hypocrites, it means an actor, an interpreter, one who impersonates another. The hypocrite is acting like something he really isn't. criticized Mary for pouring costly oil on the feet of Jesus. Ananias and Sapphira pretended to give all they acquired from the sale of land. You read that in Acts 5, verse 1 through verse 9. The hypocrite that gives alms does not care for the poor. He's not merciful. He cares not to do good. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 3, "And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing." How can one bestow all his goods to feed the poor without loving his heart? One way is to give to the poor, to be seen by me. The Bible says they have received their reward. The Greek word "received" means to receive payment in full. That is all the reward that they can expect. One will not be given on the judgment day. They sought the praise of men. They received the praise of men. They did not seek the praise of God. They will not be praised by God. Verse 3. "But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing." The exclusion is a little different from verse 2. In verse 2, it forbids seeking the praise of others. In verse 3, it forbids praising ourselves. Do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. You know, we all kind of despise the fellow who toots his own horn. He declares to everyone about his good deeds. But it's difficult not to admire ourselves. We begin to think, "I'm glad I'm not like others who boast and brag." Wait a minute. Who does that sound like? That kind of thinking makes us a Pharisee. Remember in Luke 18 and verse 11, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, "God, I thank you I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector." Question number 6. Jesus said, "Let not your left hand know what your right hand is doing." What does this mean? To not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, it means you're not to be self-conscious about your giving, because our self-consciousness will turn into self-righteousness. Some will tell us, "Just follow your heart." Is that really good advice? In Jeremiah 17 and verse 9, there it says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Our heart can deceive us. It's possible to take steps to keep our giving a secret, and all the while we're feeding the spirit of self-righteousness. Verse number 4. "That your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly." Your Father who sees in secret. We need to remember this. We need to instill this in our children, in our grandchildren, that God sees in secret. We need to remember it when we are tempted to sin. Question number 7. What does God see in secret? He sees the evil men. He sees what evil men do in secret. And he sees the good men do in secret. In in Proverbs 15 and verse 3, there it says, "The eye of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good." And in Hebrews 4 and verse 13, "And there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom you 9 and verse 12? It said, rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. In Matthew 10 and verse 42, and whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, assuredly I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward. The New Testament is full of passages offering rewards in heaven for the faithful. Concerning rewards, we need to know two things. Any action in life which does not achieve anything is worthless. One person said, unless a thing is good for something, it is good for nothing. And to banish all rewards would be to say injustice wins. If we say good men and bad men eventually end up in the same place, we are saying God doesn't care whether men are good or bad. Without rewards, no one would have any special reason to choose one lifestyle over the other. Question number 8. What are the two basic ways of acquiring wealth? In earthly life, our wealth comes from one of two basic ways. By an inheritance, or a gift, or by labor. Someone also said, from lottery tickets. Let me tell you, our wealth does not come from lottery tickets. The same is true according to the New Testament concerning the believer's wealth in heaven. They come as both an inheritance or a gift, and also a reward for faithful service. Everyone that goes to heaven shall receive an inheritance because they are a child of God. Also, there seems to be evidence that rewards are given for special service and are reserved for particular individuals. Notice in Matthew 10 and verse 41. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. So it seems here there are special rewards awaiting prophets. Other righteous men shall receive certain rewards designed especially for them. Here in Matthew 6, Jesus promises there will be a special reward given to the man who will give alms in secret. What is the meaning? What is the meaning of verse 4? Jesus is teaching here we don't need to sound trumpets when doing good deeds because our reward does not come from men who will hear trumpets. And God does not need a trumpet to attract his attention. Christians are not to keep track of good deeds as if God owes them a salary. First, if we did every imaginable good deed on earth, God doesn't owe us anything. In Luke 17 and verse 10, we read, so likewise you, when you have done all those things which you are commanded, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what was our duty to do. And second, Christians are not worried that God might cheat them out of a reward. We read in Hebrews 6 and verse 10, for God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown toward him, toward his name, and that you have ministered to the saints and do minister. As he will reward thee openly. If we praise ourselves, we are praised by an audience of only one. If we seek the praise of men, we are praised only by a small audience of men who know us, and they soon forget. If we seek the praise of God, we are praised by an immeasurable audience. All of heaven in front of nations, and it will last for all eternity. seeking praise from men. In verse 3, we are seeking praise from ourselves. In verse 4, we are seeking praise from God. The warning is clear. Our giving is not to be before men waiting for the clapping to begin, neither before ourselves waiting for the left hand to applaud the right. Our motive in giving is because we are sincerely concerned for the poor and we want to please God. Surely this is what Jesus is teaching in Matthew 6, verse 1 through verse 4. In Matthew 5 and verse 8, there it says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. If there's anyone that is subject to the gospel call this morning, we would bid you come as we stand and sing.